Hello, everyone. I'm Sandra Bargeman, and welcome to the Edge of Every Day, now at MaximizeU.life. Are you a change maker? Do you walk between worlds, between cultures, between systems? If you answered yes to any of these questions, the Edge of Every Day is the place for you. In a nutshell, this podcast is about pushing boundaries and exploring rough edges. Through conversations and shared stories with friends and colleagues, it's my hope that we can begin to understand our edges. And what I mean by edges is those places where we are fearful, those places where we are resistant to change, those places where paradox and contradicting identities live in our beliefs and in our understandings, both individually and collectively. We live in edgy, challenging times, and we cannot keep looking away from the ugly, from the difficult, and silence is no longer an option. Life isn't black or white, it's both, and I want to talk about that. I want to face the tension of paradox, and I want to engage in the hard conversations. I want to explore the rough edges between our light-filled brilliance and our dark, shadowy corners. Because the more we recognize our own edges and get real about them, the more we can help others to do the same. And that, I fully believe, can help to change the world. So, thanks again for tuning in. Today, we are live in the Hive with our special guest, artist and author, Dixie Denman Junius. Her new book, Circling the Start, features her asemic art, which celebrates the sacred space where poetry and artistic symbology merge and explores the liminal space between language and unspoken meaning. Like poetry, hers is a language that transcends the mundane and speaks directly to our souls. In this episode, we explore how art and poetry serve us in exploring our rough edges and in finding meaning in them. So, without further ado, it is time to introduce our guest. Dixie Denman Junius was raised in New York's Catskill Mountains near the Woodstock Art Colony. Surrounded by nature's beauty, she was immersed from an early age in a family and community of artists, artisans, musicians, and gifted educators. She studied art, art history, and psychology at Hartwick College and Boston University, graduating with a degree in psychology. Her career took her from Boston to Southern California, where in the early 90s, she left her consulting practice to become a full-time artist. She studied papermaking at UCLA under Harriet Germain, becoming an accomplished papermaker, artist, and teacher, showing and selling her work throughout Southern California. Tight studio space has brought opportunities to explore working small, extending her art in new and unexpected directions, and employing an array of materials, tools, and techniques. Watercolors, inks, pastels, brushes and pens, bits and bobs, things and stuff. These days, her eclectic work spans asemic writing, art, painting, drawing, papermaking, monoprinting, mixed media, paper cutting, and photo glitching. You can find out more about Dixie at dixiejunius.com. Welcome, Dixie Denman Junius. Hello.
Thank you. Hello, hello, hello. It's here.
It's great to have you. I'm loving your purple hair.
Well, thank you. It's my natural color.
Of course it is, because you're mystical and magical.
Yes, of course.
I love that. I love that. Well, I, as I love to do, I love to tell my listeners how I know my guests. And Dixie and I have gotten to know one another through a wonderfully synchronistic moment. As you scroll through your social media and you look at your feed, certain things get sponsored or just show up because someone else in your friends or your followers has posted on it. Anyway, something came up on my feed on Instagram from a Van Vliet gallery. And Dixie, it's an online gallery. It's a fabulous gallery, which BTW, go and see it, vanvliet.com, I think is their website. But anyway, I saw Dixie's fantastic art there and was completely drawn into it. And I'm checking it out, and I loved her name, Dixie Denman and Junius. And I thought, oh, that's a great name. And I loved her art. And I, long story short, ended up being in contact with her and purchasing one of her artworks that is now delightfully hanging in my, and I didn't want to drag it up here, but it's hanging in my living room. But it turns out, then I get into a conversation with her and I find out that, now this is where you're going to pick up the story, Dixie. I find out that she, Denman, this is why I was like, oh, Denman, that's familiar to me. Denman Mountain, hello, here in the Catskill Mountains, which is where my husband and I own a home. Where I'm tuning in from now. Oh my gosh, I have found this artist that was raised like in the Catskill Mountains and right in my backyard. It was great. So yeah, I reached out and lo and behold, so you're from the Catskill Mountains originally.
I am, and the mountains are still in me. I love the Catskills, and I try to get back whenever I can to just be hugged by those mountains.
Oh yeah. Embraced in the, well, I mean, so your family is so, and if you have a freaking mountain named after you, you're like, yes, entrenched in the Catskill Mountains.
Yes. And there's another mountain, Peekamoose Mountain, that my mother's father owned a large chunk of back in the day. He was a lumberman. And so part of my growing up was on Peekamoose. We had waterfalls and ice caves and a lake and just a wonderful place to be, all of it.
An enviable childhood. Indeed. Indeed. Well, I feel particularly grateful to have a home here in these Catskill Mountains. My husband spent much of his childhood in them, and that's how we come to them. Hang on one second. I was a bad girl. I didn't turn off my phone, which is a rarity for me, but I heard it go off in the opening. Anyway. So, I feel particularly grateful to be held in these, and overwhelmingly grateful to be held in these mountains during COVID, which is where in the mountains is where I birthed this podcast.
Yes,
so
indeed.
I mean, we, yeah, yoo-hoo. All a beautiful, beautiful connection. And I am holding a birthday gathering in my salon. Some of my listeners will know that I have a salon space on my property. I've reimagined my 1,000-square-foot garage on my property, and I'm opening it up for a big birthday party in April. And guess who is going to be there visiting that I get to meet in person? None other than Dixie Denman Junius, whose birthday is the day after mine. We are in Aries season. Yes. And by the way, yes.
Yes, we are connected.
We are.
and we will party.
And we will party as Aries are wont to do. And yes, while we're in Aries and talking about April, happy April Fools. Today is April Fool's Day.
Is it?
Yes. It's really not April Fool. We're pretending it's April Fool's because this is going to air on April Fool's, but we're going with that because that's part of the April Fool's joke. It's also unbelievably, I looked this up, it's Poetry and Creative Mind Day. I mean, how perfect is that for your show? Poetry and the Creative Mind Day and April Fool's on your show.
It's meant to be.
Yes, indeed. So I have an April Fool's joke for you. What did the poet say to Luke Skywalker? Metaphors be with you. Oh my God.
Oh.
So good. So bad, it's delicious. Ba-dum-chon. Yeah, excellent. Okay, so now I'm going to dive into my two favorite questions that I ask all of my guests out of the gate. First, Dixie, what identity do you lead with?
I thought about this because I knew you were going to ask me this. Mm. And
well, you did your research like a good student.
Yes, I am a student. I am an artist with a beginner's mind who seeks to connect and uplift.
So that's the identity that you walk around in the world with.
Yeah, I do.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah, I think at certain points in my life, I've always thought that I would not thought, I did lead as an artist, as an actor. And at times in my life, I think in many times in my life, I've led with being the comedian as a way probably to disarm people, but also as potentially a way of protecting myself. But yeah, I definitely also walk in the world uplifting people, trying to be someone who walks on the edge. Yeah.
And here we are.
And here we are. So that's a segue into what worlds do you walk between, Dixie? What worlds do you walk between?
I would say I walk between the inner life and outer life, as many artists and people of my ilk do. It's a life that is good. It requires being in oneself a part of the time, but also it's of no use unless I am in the outer world connecting and uplifting as I try to do through my work and through my life.
I'm contributing, absolutely. Well, that makes me think of, I'm going to have to read this because it's a favorite quote of mine. And I came across it when I was doing research on you. And it's, I mean, you literally just basically said it, which is so apropos. And yes, we artists share and seekers and people who want to be spirit embodied understand that going within and going without. But anyway, Carl Jung. Famous quote by Carl Jung. People say, quote, people say that what we are seeking is a meaning for life. I don't think that's what we're really seeking. I think that what we're seeking is an experience of being alive, so that our life experience on the purely physical plane will have resonance within our innermost being and reality. So that we actually feel the rapture of being alive, unquote, to feel the rapture of being alive and experience the zeal of existence requires that sacred marriage between the inner and that mundane inner and, well, the outer inner life and the inner yet vast, universal, otherworldly understanding. That is the edge of every day, right there. That's the ultimate. I always say that facing change is the ultimate edge of every day. But honestly, that's really not the edge of every day. The ultimate edge of every day. What it is the understanding that we are, that we live on that edge, that veil between physical embodiment and and being a spiritual being. Oh, lovely. That's just lovely. All right, let's dive into all of your work. I want to start with, I think the best place to start, and we can get to all my other questions about what asemic means and what it is and blah, blah, blah. But let's just start with your book. Can you show everyone your book? You're incredible. That's her artwork, folks. Circling the Start. It's gorgeous. I'm happy to say I have a copy of it too, signed by the gorgeous author. So tell us, so what inspired you to put this book together, to write it? Tell us the story of that.
There is a story.
Yes.
I was spending a lot of time in the last few years in a couple of Facebook groups that are connected with asemic art, visual poetry, art in general, poetry. In that world, I came across some friends who have been friends since, well, a few years now. One of them is Christine Snodgrass, who is a force in, she's an educator, she's a poet, she is a publisher,
yes,
editor, and is in every way doing everything she can to put women forward in art, asemic writing, and the world of publishing. And
Don't worry, folks. We're going to find out what asemic writing is. Hang in there. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Real quickly, asemic writing is writing that is detached from language. I like to call it the art of writing before, beyond, and apart from language.
I love that.
It's an entire community and movement I discovered with asemic writing.
How you found this Facebook group and how you found Christine Snodgrass.
Exactly.
Okay, so back to her and her publishing.
So Christine phoned me in the summer of 2022 and asked if I would like to have a book. And I am told this never happens in real life, that a publisher calls a person, an artist, and the story of that phone call is that Christine and Carol Lynn Knight, the two directors of this publishing company, and Anhinga Press, they had received a grant to publish their first ever series of visual poetry. And they asked me to be the first of the writers, of the artists, to create a book in this series. And the grant came from, I should mention his name, DeVillo Sloan, who was very generous to make this happen. And Hinka had previously only published poetry, and I was their maiden voyage into visual.
Oh, fabulous. I love this whole idea of visual poetry. Okay, so I really want to jump back, though, before I lose the thread on asemic writing. Can you pull up a picture, one of your artworks from your book that really shows this? It's beautiful work. I was just with a friend of mine who is a writer and a fellow actor. I've worked with him, and he also is a painter, and he knew exactly and what it was. And I showed him some of your work, and he just loved it. And he's kind of played around with it as well. But I so get this. Please put it up on the screen. And for those of you who are listening in, is that it? That's, yeah.
That's a pure Asemic piece.
Yes. So for those of you who are listening to the audio, it resembles writing, but it has that look of almost ancient writing surrounded with, that's what I was thinking. This ancient, like you would see it on a cave or some otherworldly writing with art surrounding it and uplifting it. And so, folks, you can also, again, see her artwork on her website, Dixie Junius. For those of you who are just listening to the audio, for those of you who could see that, they can see how gorgeous that is. But did you tell the whole story of Ahinga Press? Did you finish that?
So that was the start of the book. Right. And the journey of the book involved several months of creating images, glitching images, which is another term that we'll get to, I'm sure, in just a little bit.
Yes.
And glitching is a digital rendering of an image. And I spent several months working with Christine back and forth. She was the curatorial and editorial genius that helped me through this. I don't know how many images were produced. Probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 images were then curated down to about 70 pages or so. And Christine and I became bonded. We became friends. I was allowed some input into some of that process, which was so necessary for this kind of book, but so unusual, I'm told, in publishing. You don't become friends with your publisher. You don't become friends with your editor, usually. It was just a wonderful bonding experience for both of us. Mm-hmm. And then Lynn Knight comes into the picture as the person who is formatting and selecting typefaces and doing the production end of the book. And she and I became close through that process as well. So it's a real story for me of the power of, first of all, social media to connect people. Social media gets all kinds of a bad rap for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah, that are valid. However, it also can be a force for good.
And in this case, for me, it helped me stay connected through COVID. Mm. It helped me connect with a whole community that I didn't know was out there until I started exploring Asemics, and it ultimately led to the creation of this book, which again connected me with two of my favorite people now in my life, and allowed a place for me to show my story through art. And
beautiful.
I'm so grateful for every bit of this experience.
I'm sure you are. It's just beautiful. It's such an empowering, uplifting story. So tell me, what is, back to Asemic writing, what drew you to it? When did you discover it? When did you start doing it? What is its relationship to visual poetry? That's the other thing. And then in a bit, we'll get into glitching. What tell us, walk us through all of that.
Oh, gosh, I could go on and on about Asemic writing. It has a history that dates back to the 8th century, where a drunk monk sometimes used his braid in his hair when he was drunk to create images that were he had found that doing his job as a scribe was limiting in terms of what he wanted to express. And so he began creating imagery, writing imagery that was outside the scope of his normal work. And his name was Zhuang Zhu. And that was the first known Semitic writer that we're aware of. But it goes very far back, but only had a name ascribed to it starting in the 1990s.
Oh, and is that when you discovered it?
That's not when I discovered it.
When did
That's
you discover it?
I discovered it in probably I discovered that it was a thing
Right.
somewhere around 2019, 2020, something like that. But it was given a name back in the 1990s by a couple of visual poetry dudes who decided that that would be the word for this form of writing that is not
That
attached.
makes sense, right? Not, yeah.
But I had been doing it really all my artistic career. I inserted what, well, when I was a child, I was attracted to Asia, to especially Japan and China, in terms of the visuals that I saw in books and so forth. And I started trying to emulate that writing,
The
that
kanji, yeah.
style, and then just carried through for and not so much trying to emulate anymore, but just using those sorts of images, writing in my work, even in handmade paper. I have some pieces that show an acemic sort of feel to them. So yeah, it's been with me for a long time, but when I discovered that there was a word for it and that there was a community and a movement surrounding this, then I just opened up to these are my people. This is
This is my tribe.
this is what I do.
Yeah.
And so
This is what I do. And how has that served you? I mean, how does this style, visual poetry? I so love that, and it's so true looking at your book. I was so overwhelmed opening it up and just reading through your foreword and your words, and then trying to put myself into how you might be creating these things, these beautiful pieces. What does working with this in this style, how does that relate to your psychological work? How does that serve you in exploring, as any artist uses their art to continually explore who they are and explore their rough edges and their own healing?
Tremendously healing, and tremendously connecting with what I cannot say in words. I have said that words fail me, art almost never does. Semitic writing, in particular, Semitic art, provides a sort of a conduit from what's here to what's in here. And
And here means she put it to her head, and then she went to her heart.
yes, sorry, I forget people are listening and not seeing. But between worlds, it opens up new worlds to me. And I don't really go into creating with a plan in mind ever, really. It is what comes through me and to me as I gather my materials around me, and I just begin, and the flow begins, and it's without words. It's a place that I go to, and
a place that I think that liminal space, as all artists understand it to be, that liminal space between, well, between the worlds, the mundane and the otherworldly, but also your internal liminal space that's particular to you as you grapple with what it is you're trying to explore in yourself and to get out into the world and to explore yourself. Do you do any psychological, consultation or counseling or anything of that sort any longer?
Not really any longer. I have found a place where I am comfortable being myself in this world, and where I feel comfortable sharing what I am and what I create. And I am a neurodiverse person, artist,
yes.
Which to me, most people are neurodiverse. If you get right down to it,
I would completely agree with you. But yes, absolutely. But we're here. And for those people who don't know what that is, explain a little about that, and how this art and style is helpful to you, and how you can use it to be helpful with others who are neurodivergent. So.
Sure. It neurodiverse refers to a person who doesn't fit within the psychological norms of what we call average. I would say average versus normal thinking styles and behavior to some degree. I call it, and have heard it called, a different attentional style.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be anything from folks who are on the spectrum to people like myself who have ADHD and have had other psychological issues coming up or as adults. But with ADHD, the attentional style is sometimes called, with my particular style, it's roaming and homing. I go out there and
mentally,
yes, mentally,
psychically,
yes, and emotionally, and gather and then home in on what's for me, what I need to focus on and create. And it comes up from within, but it's also a gathering process. And people, before I understood this about myself, and sometimes before people understood this about me, I might seem scattered, or like I'm not paying attention, or any number of things. Some people with ADHD are more activated in terms of their behaviors. They move about a lot. That's not the kind that I have particularly, but I do have a very busy brain. And my busy brain needs art to focus it and to settle it. And so that's been very valuable for me at times I have forgotten that in my life, and then I've had to rediscover it, that, oh yes, this is what works. And then I'm able, once I'm creating and at home in my creative space, I'm able to do for others that I couldn't do if I didn't have art. I wouldn't be me.
Beautifully shared, Dixie. Thank you. I totally, totally see that. I can see how this process, I can see you sharing this process with others who it can really serve them in that inner gathering of data, emotional data. And like almost, it's almost feels like Rorschach a little kind of ish. And, you know, to help focus all of the tendrils and into this visual poetry, this visual languaging, the power of that is just tremendous. So thank you for that. I want to ask you how you landed on this title. Circling the Start is a fantastic name. It's so interesting and compelling.
Gosh, because can I just say one more thing about...
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and now I've lost it. Never mind. I was going to say something more about all that. Circling the Start came to me as I was creating this book. I kept circling back to where I started. I keep circling back in life. I think that's something that is common to all of us. T.S. Eliot says, and the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. And I hope I've got that right, but that's what I believe we are all doing, is circling hopefully ever upward as well.
Spiraling upward, yes.
Yes, but the book for me was a circle of creating and then glitching, which again, we'll get to glitching in a second. And then creating more original work, and then going on my iPad and digitally altering. And that's what glitching is. And
so Tara, pull that open a little. Digitally changing. Talk more about that for people who don't really know what you're talking about.
Sure. I don't know what I'm talking about.
good. It's all good. We like that.
Yes. Glitchery is a mystery to me. I
loved what I've read about it, but I can't wait to hear how you describe it.
Yes, it's taking something, either a photo or a piece of original art or something in print, and going in with a program. And I use several different programs to alter my work. But you go in there and you start playing with that
image. Is the cover of your book glitching?
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact.
Mm. Yeah, I can see, yeah, how that has been, yeah, interesting. Yeah.
So, and some of my analog or original work, sometimes people mistake for glitching and vice versa, but it is taking that original image, and I go back, again, this is with the circling, I go back several times. With the same image, I'll go from original to one way of altering it, to another way of altering it, to another program to alter it further, and then go back around again. And it's intense, but it's also very meditative in
Oh,
nature.
totally.
And I get lost. I get lost as
As
much in,
all artists do, yeah.
I get lost as much in glitching as I do in my original pieces, because it's so captivating, and then you have to know where to stop.
As any creator knows, like, oh no,
yes,
yeah, right, no, stop, stop.
And sometimes from one
forever.
Yes, sometimes from one original, I have several glitches that I love to choose from. And that's special.
Yeah.
But the real key is to find, you know, to just find those images that are there. They're there in the universe to be creative and can never be replicated.
Yeah.
You can't
Yeah.
copy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very magical.
Indeed. Wow. Well, and what I loved about that, some one aspect that I read about with glitching that you have haven't yet touched upon was the notion of a glitch being a quote unquote mistake. And that it spurs this opening, and all I could think of was kintsugi, that where, you know, when something another Asian art, hello, that would appeal to you and I, this of something that seemingly comes out of a quote negative, when of course it's not, but that then opens that liminal space to create something anew. And what inspires, and when I think about that, what inspires me to think about is, if we're thinking about problems that we're facing in our life and the things that are appearing to be mistakes or difficulties or glitches in our quote unquote plan, that therein is the opportunity for change, for something that we didn't see. The liminal space can open up where we can create a solution or a piece of art in this case, or a mystery of some type, or an understanding of a situation or a tendency in a way that we hadn't prior to this quote unquote glitch, negative thing, problem, whatever happening. And that's so powerful.
I love that. And it's so true.
Yeah.
And things break and they fall apart, and we get to make something more beautiful from the broken parts.
Yeah.
And stronger and even more special.
Yeah.
And
Oh, yeah. I sang a song in the Edge of Everyday solo show called that in, you know, was the original of this podcast that holds all of the concepts that then I moved into. It's my platform, if you will, my spiritual platform, if you will. But the song is called Holy Secret. And the line is, you've got to fall to pieces to, oh, good grief. It's been a while since I sang the song. You've got to fall to pieces to let the pieces grow. Meaning, be transformed, transform you. To let those broken parts, to your point, grow and become the next best version of who you are. And the song, by, just as a shout out, is by Georgia Stitt, Holy Secret.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
It's all about transformation of one sort or another when you're making art or making a life.
Indeed. Because life is art, and art is life.
And Yes, and we're all transforming and circling back around all the time.
Circling the start. Amen. Amen. Well, I think we have circled back to the start, my friend.
We have.
And what a delicious, enlightening, artistic, learned conversation we've had. I thank you. Thank you so much. And on behalf of my listeners, I thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's a complete and utter pleasure. So you can find Dixie. Again, her website is Dixie Junius, and these will all be in the show notes, .com. And her press is it Anhinga?
Anhinga.
Anhinga Press. People can find your book on your website and at Anhinga Press. You are also, are you on, I know you're on Facebook, and you're on LinkedIn, yes?
Yes, I'm on Instagram, and the book is also available on Amazon.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And Van Vliet Gallery is an online gallery. Let's give a plug to them. You can find them, just Google Van Vliet, Vliet Gallery. And the woman who started it, her first name is Carla. If you Google that, you will come to it. And it's also, as I found, on Instagram as well. Did we touch on all the places we can find you and all of your work?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think we got them. I think we got them. And if not, you can write to me and I'll get them in the show notes. Dixie, thank you again for coming on the Edge of Every Day and sharing your talent and your wisdom and your beauty.
Thank you.
And for those of you who are listening, thank you for spending time with us on the Edge of Every Day. Remember, you are always at the edge of the miraculous. Till we speak again, take good care.